This is Adam Matas with DNVR, the DNVR Bar, and the DNVR Nuggets podcast, and you're listening to The Whole Show with Brady Hull.
Welcome back to the show. We're live from the Auto Collision Specialist Studios. Joining us now on our First Advantage text or hotline, I should say, Kelly Lyle of the Fort Collins, Colorado, and talking all things Colorado State. Kelly, the Rams had a scrimmage last week. You got a chance to talk to coach and players after the fact. What stood out to you as far as what they were saying and what coach thought of the scrimmage?
Well, what stood out, I guess, was that they say there was a pretty big emphasis on the passing game, which, again, for a coach that's been pretty vocal about wanting to build a strong physical running game, seems a little counterintuitive. But, you know, Steve Adazio and Todd Senteo, a quarterback, talking to us afterwards, both said that they did throw the ball more than run it in the scrimmage. Now, Adazio explained that part of that is because that's what they need the most work at. They were really bad on third downs last year, both offense and defense, so they're really emphasizing third downs. They're doing a lot of situational third down stuff in their scrimmages, in their practices, and that they would start working the running game more as fall camp got closer to, as they got closer to the start of the season. So we'll see where that goes, but, you know, at least at this point, if you're a CSU fan that's worried about the Rams becoming 3 yards in a cloud of dust type Big Ten, old school Big Ten football team, at least at the moment, from what they tell us, that's not what they're practicing. Now, it's hard for us to say because as observers, the only thing we usually get to watch are kind of the team drills toward the end of practice, and that's when they're usually running two-minute drills and things where they are throwing the ball a lot. So, I don't have any perspective to share with it other than what they're saying. But at least it's probably a good sign. You know, Steve Adazio did at one point say that he believes this will be the most balanced offense he's ever had.
That's and Kelly, that's interesting too, because you know so much of what we've talked about with Adazio is the yes, he's big on the trenches, the offensive line, and he's going to run the ball. But is this one of those situations where he's looking around and he sees the tools that he has and says, I need to adjust to them a little bit more? Or is Adazio trying to find new ways? Is he kind of not, I don't want to say reinventing himself as a coach, but I guess in a weird way I am asking that question.
I don't think he's reinventing himself as a coach. I think he realizes that the only way a good run game works is you have to still have the threat of a pass. Otherwise, people are just going to put 9 and 10 guys in the box to stop the run. You know, play action passing is useless. There's no worry about the fake if you're a team that can't run the ball. We kind of saw that under Mike Bobo a little bit at times, that, you know, the play-action passing game was pointless because the opponent knew they weren't going to run the ball, knew they couldn't run the ball. So I think it's a little bit of just even some just basic gamesmanship to understand that the pass game has at least got to be enough of a threat to keep a defense honest. But another part of it, I think, is you've got to look at that roster and you see Trey McBride, Dante Wright, Cam Butler, Ty McCullough, EJ Scott. You see that some of your best talent is in your tight ends and your receivers. And, you know, that they're not going to get the ball unless you're going to line them up in the backfield. It's going to be hard to get them the ball in a run game. So you better find a way to pass, even if it's short passes, if it's play action, whatever. You know, I don't think they want to waste Trey McBride's final year at CSU as a guy who's going to block for some running back. I think they want to make sure they do get the ball in the air and get it in his hands, and they're going to have to throw it some to make that happen.
Yeah, I mean, I'm seeing, you know, national guys come out and say they really feel strongly about the fact that Trey McBride could be a first-round pick, maybe late, but a first-round guy. So, yeah, if you're a Rams fan, you're looking at that going, man, this could potentially be one of the greatest Rams of all time. So we don't want to waste that.
Yeah, I mean, he certainly, you know, anybody who's watched Colorado State football for the last couple of years understands what a tremendous talent Trey McBride is. The guy, you know, he's got great hands. He's, you know, he catches balls that are thrown near him. He is a dominating blocker. whether he's blocking a defensive end or whether he's, you know, knocking down a linebacker or safety downfield, and a relentless blocker. I mean, if anything, I'm always thinking the guy's going to get flagged for too much unnecessary roughness because he's still driving a guy into the ground 20 yards away from where the play is. But that's just the way he is. He is just a fierce competitor. And he does go all out, no matter what he's doing. And that's what you want. And those are the kind of guys that you do see go on to be great college players and really go on to do something in the NFL. Guys that have that kind of passion, that desire, and then that skill set. He's got a tremendous skill set. So I think that it would be a crying shame if you didn't find a way to make sure you were. To me, you got to throw the ball to that guy 5, 6, 7 times a game, bare minimum, just to take advantage of him, and probably even in the double digits.
Well, everything that's going to help set up this offense is, you know, Coach Addazio's talked a lot about the offensive line, and now the running backs, too. Who's going to be the starting running back, or does it even matter with the Rams? Marcus McElroy, of course, David Bailey, Ajon Vivens. I mean, they have a nice-looking backfield as far as depth, Kelly, but who's going to get that number one spot?
You know, I'm really curious to see that. I got a chance to talk to David Bailey this past week after practice, and I know a few observers that have told me, people that have just come and watched parts of practices here and there, say he is the real deal. They think he has got a chance to be something special in this offense this year. You know, we'll see. That everything I watch, you know, McElroy's still kind of getting the number one offense reps. But again, we're watching the 2-minute drill stuff at the end. We're not watching, you know, the every practice, every play. So I think that McElroy's probably still sort of the heir apparent. But I think that David Bailey's got a really good chance to beat him out and win that job from him. And then I think Ajon Vivens is a guy that's had he had a really, really good spring. And he's got a little bit of breakaway speed and some stuff that they don't necessarily get with the other two. The other two are a little bit more big and powerful, and Ajon gives them a little bit of that scat back speed that they could use. So I think they're going to use all three guys pretty significantly. But I got a hunch that by the end of the season, David Bailey's going to be the one that's going to have the most carries and most yards.
Kelly Lyle joining us from the Fort Collins, Coloradoan. Where does Dante Wright fit into this mix, Kelly? Because, you know, 2 years ago we were talking about this continuation of wide receiver U. You know, Warren Jackson, Dante Wright. We'll see what the future holds for Warren Jackson, of course, just trying to get on Minnesota. But Dante Wright, I mean, just kind of took us all by storm when he started for CSU. I mean, he was a firecracker. But where do you see him fitting on this roster?
Another guy, they're going to find ways to get him the ball. I think we might see him line up at tailback occasionally. We're going to see him line up in a slot back kind of position on end arounds. You're going to see quick bubble screens to him, and you're going to see him go deep at times. They're going to have to. You know, Steve Addazio has made it pretty clear. John Budmeyer's made it pretty clear, the O coordinator. They understand that this guy is one of the most talented and explosive players on their football team. So they've got to find ways to put the ball in his hands. So I think we'll see a wide variety of different ways that they will do that to make sure that he's touching the ball enough times. Again, I don't think any football coach worth their weight can not get the ball in the hands of a playmaker like that. That is your number one priority in my mind, and they've talked about it, so they clearly understand it. It'll be interesting to see the different places that Dante lines up and the different types of plays they use to get the ball in his hands, but he's another guy that you better find a way that he's touching the ball 10 times or more a game.
That first game coming up quickly, September 3rd, a Friday night against South Dakota State. Kelly, when you look at the non-conference schedule with South Dakota State, Vanderbilt, Toledo, Iowa, where do you see this Rams starting things off before they jump into conference play? Do you think by the end of those first four games, we're going to be in panic mode, we're going to be in kind of average mode, or, hey, we're feeling pretty good about ourselves?
You know, I've been tossing that around for quite some time. I think this team has got, the potential to, you know, maybe get off to a decent start. That to me, these first three games are incredibly pivotal. I don't see them beating Iowa no matter what, whether they go into that game 0-3, 1-2, 2-1, 3-0. I just don't think they're winning at Iowa. But those other three games are going to be huge tone setters. And yeah, honestly, I could see them going anywhere from 0-3 in those three to potentially up to 3-0. I think realistically, they're probably going to be 1-2 or 2-1 at that point. And then it's going to be really, you know, really tough. If they're 1-2 and then go lose at Iowa, it's going to be a pretty dismal start to the season. And I got a feeling that this confidence we're seeing right now in fall camp, when everybody's confidence could be pretty fragile if this team gets off to a bad start. So I think they need to somehow try to get to at least 2-2 in non-conference to be able to have a respectable chance to do something in the conference season. And that's not going to be easy. South Dakota State's a very good team. They're coming off playing in the national championship game at the FCS level last spring, just a few months ago. They're number four in the preseason poll, I see. They lost a few guys, but they're still a very, very good FCS program. Toledo is one of the best, if not the best, team in the Mid-American Conference this year. And, you know, Vanderbilt in SEC terms is not an SEC power, but they are in the SEC. And that puts them at a little bit different level. A bad SEC team is still a pretty darn good football team. So we'll see. It's going to be a very, very tough start, but really interesting, I think, too, because, like, I think it truly could go all over the map, anywhere from 3-0 to 0-3 in those first three.
Yeah, and then, of course, they'll jump into conference play October 9th. We'll see against San Jose State. We'll see what it's looking like for them. But a couple of weeks out, Kelly, we're looking forward to it, my friend, and we'll be catching up with you every Thursday.
All right, sounds good. We'll talk to you later.
All right, man. That's Kelly Lyle of the Fort Collins Coloradoan. I think, Koufax, I think I had him going 3-1 to start out. Is that right? I had them, like, on fire, coming out early. I have them beating South Dakota State. I have them winning against Vanderbilt at home, I think, even though they're an SEC school, but they're not very good. Do I have them beating Toledo? That's the question. I got to go find my – that's the scary one, because that's in Ohio, so it's on the road, and then you're at Iowa. You're not winning that game. So maybe I had them 2-2 to start this thing out. All right, I got a pair of tickets for Hops for Hunger. This is an awesome thing. Friday, September 10th. An awesome opportunity to give back to Weld Food Bank. You get these tickets are $45 each. So it gives you access into the festival area in Windsor. You get unlimited pours. So they're going to give you a cup when you get there. You give them this ticket, they give you a cup. It's unlimited pours. So beer. Yeah, get a driver, by the way. Do the right thing. You actually get, like, it's like a pretty cheap if you go through them to do it or something. Unlimited pours, a collectible mug, free meal from JBS, and live music. Festival. I mean, all of that. This is a free pair that I'm giving away, but it's a $45 each value. I mean, it's crazy. I'm going to go caller number four on the First Advantage hotline, 970-353-1310. Caller number four, you're going to get a pair of these tickets to the Weld Food Bank's Hops for Hunger coming up on September 10th. Caller number four, 970-353-1310. All right, we'll take a short break. When we come back, we'll wrap up hour number one. The Rockies win. I mean, I'm just rooting for 65. That's it. That's my goal for this team. But they're actually like, I mean, when they win, they look pretty damn good. We'll talk about the Rocks a little bit next.
NoCo Now keeps you up to speed on what's happening on a local level. Weekdays at 9 on Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.